Our drama teacher, Prime Minister, puts on his best performance and still makes a fool out of himself. The experts, or as we would like to call them, the statist false priests, call for a redefinition of what it means to be fully vaccinated. And then straight out of the book of Revelation, after the seven trumpets and the seven bowls, now you have the seventh wave of COVID, as we've been warned by Teresa Tam, and we should be prepared for the fall. I'm Andrew DiBartolo, and that's Matt Halleck. Today is June the 13th, and this is the Liberty Dispatch.
Welcome to the Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. Thank you for joining us. And if you're joining us on our Rumble channel at Liberty Coalition Canada, we just ask that you would share these videos with people. If you're checking us out on a podcast catcher, whatever that might be, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play, anything like that, also share, like, subscribe, rate, review, whatever you can do on those catchers. It helps us get our content out to more people. So if you want to change the narrative in Canada, that is the little but very important step that you can take to help us get our content before more eyes. Speaking of different ways to get our content, we are now on the Fight Laugh Feast Network. That's FLFnetwork.com, and you can check us out as well by downloading the Fight Laugh Feast app from either Google Play or the Apple App Store, and you can get all our content direct on demand through that app. So we definitely want you to go there, check that out. They have some amazing podcasts, some wonderful content that is being put out through the Fight Laugh Feast Network. So we are thrilled to be a part of that. Also, be sure to go over to our website, the LibertyCoalitionCanada.com, and you can see our revamped website with you and me, Andrew, our fancy mugs, our nice photos on the dispatch right on the front page there. You can check that out. Be sure to sign up for our email list so you can avoid big tech censoring you, as YouTube is wont to do, as they keep censoring our videos on that platform. And also be sure to leave a donation over there on the page. Just a small monthly donation is a huge help to us continuing to build this institution and continuing to roll out bigger, better shows for you, our listening and viewing audience. So we definitely ask you to go do that. And Andrew, thank you again for being on the show. Love being with you here. And maybe you can set up the first story that we have before us this day.
Well, if there's anything that our listeners and viewers know, is that here on the Dispatch, we are serious and dignified, and we are tactful and winsome in everything that we do. And so I want to set that up. I want that to be our tone. We're very concerned about our tone. And we need to realize, so this first story really is speaking about our very wonderful Prime Minister, who is a shining example to all world leaders. And in the past few weeks, he has been a paragon of virtue and wisdom, and he's excelled in his position as the leader of our country. And so what we want to do is we want to highlight a few clips of him doing the most dignified job as a prime minister. So in this first clip, what we'd like to do is we'd like to show an example of our prime minister sharing with a group of students his rather inspired vision for what Canada is and for what Canada could be.
Think of fighting climate change, or reconciliation with Indigenous people, or eradicating poverty, or creating a properly gender-balanced country, and removing sort of the gender inequities, or fighting racism, including systemic racism inside all our institutions. Those are things that take a long while to do. But in order to do the things that are hard and take a long while to do, we need to make sure that all of you are thinking about what that's going to look like.
In this next clip, what we want to do is we want to highlight for our people our Prime Minister's very keen understanding of the rights and freedoms of Canadians.
And there are debates. And we have a culture where the difference is guns can be used for hunting or for sport shooting in Canada. And there's lots of gun owners, and they're mostly respecting and law-abiding. But you can't use a gun for self-protection in Canada. That's not a right that you have in the Constitution or anywhere else. If you try and buy a gun and say it's for self-protection, no, you don't get that. You get it for hunting. You can get it for sport shooting. You can take it to the range. No problem, as long as you go through our rigorous background checks. But there's a difference around the culture. And one of the things that we're seeing with the debate in the States is you get more and more of the American-style, you know, right to carry, self-defense arguments filtering up through the, you know, the usual more right-wing communications channels.
Yeah.
Now, if those two clips didn't already help you understand this, so marvelous is our Prime Minister that there's been a children's book that has been written about him that is rife with very wonderful illustrations as well. And so what we want to do is we want to show a clip of a review of this children's book that we know will be accessible and a tremendous blessing to the parents and children who read this book regarding our wonderful Prime Minister.
This is a Dr. Seuss-esque parody of the Grinch That Stole Christmas. We have How the Prime Minister Stole Freedom. And I'll pop this up on the screen. Amazing creativity here. Written by Derek Smith and illustrated by Kaide Knipe. How the Prime Minister Stole Freedom. And this is a parody where you could read it to your kids. It's clean. And but adults all over would enjoy how this goes. And it's written exactly like you would expect a Dr. Seuss kind of book to be written. it's in rhyme. It's in parable of the situation that's been happening in Canada, that's plagued Canada over the past few years and leading up to the trucker convoy and moving into where we currently are in this very moment. But I'll read you some excerpts from the book. Here's this is moving past the whole introduction and getting right into the story. And many people were fired or took daily swabs for refusing the vaccine over their jobs. Until one day the tide started to turn. An assistant approached looking very concerned. Of course, this is the Prime Minister, and it's, of course, it's not specific to any Prime Minister, but it's definitely one pretty boy Prime Minister here with his Chinese flag and picture of Winnie the Pooh. If you don't get that reference, you haven't been on the internet long enough. Sir, the truckers are furious with mandates and rules. They claim they were the ones that we are the ones that are fools. They say we ignored their requests and their rights, and that they will continue to protest with no end in sight. They're driving their trucks here. They've already deployed, and some are now calling it a freedom convoy. The Prime Minister sneered and laughed. Deep in his throat, he composed himself and then started to gloat. My dear assistant, listen to me. These truckers are a small fringe minority. We can make them look awful. The people will listen to me. We run this show, for I am science, you see. We'll make them look terrible, that they'll turn around and no single protester will be left to be found. From coast to coast, the truckers drove through the snow, and their small fringe numbers continued to grow. Then one day, a trucker appeared in the town with thousands behind them for miles around. They filled every street as a big honking team, and the Prime Minister claimed, I have COVID-19. I really must go. I'm infectious, you see. I'd spend a week and spend a week in hide or under quarantine. For days, the Prime Minister hid in his home, but the truckers refused to leave him alone. This is too good. I simply don't get it. I don't get it one bit. These truckers won't leave. They continue to sit. They've been blowing bouncy houses and barbecues in the street. Why don't they simply admit defeat? Dance parties, horn honking, and flags wave to and fro. These horrible truckers. They just have to go. And the book goes on and on and on and on. This is some of the best stuff right here. His brain shrunk 3 more sizes that day. You can't make this up. You can't make this up. It's a fantastic book.
And so, Matt, in light of those clips, I want to give you an opportunity to respond and to speak to the Right Honorable Prime Minister of our country.
Well, I mean, what we're seeing here is just a continuing pattern of what we've seen with our Right Honorable Leader, the petty tyrant, the boy king, Justin Trudeau, over the entirety of his reign and rule in Canada. He has this habit of making extraordinarily radical and foolish statements at public outings. And that includes, you know, from that clip when he's talking about his utopian vision for what Canada is going to be. In that same setting, he also talked about how he was not going to live up to his promise to do proportional representation, and how he prefers ranked choice balloting because obviously everybody's second choice in Canada is the Liberal Party, so they'll never lose another election the way that Canadian politics runs. So no wonder he would prefer that choice. And then he also just said a foolish thing that, you know, that way you can vote for the red guy first and the orange guy orange girl second and the green guy third, and then you'll never get the blue guy. So over and over again in these public settings, whether it's chastising a woman for daring to use the term mankind and saying, we prefer to use people kind in a really condescending tone as he mansplains what type of preferred language she ought to use, or whether it's him endorsing the tyrannical, autocratic, dictatorial regime of China, our highest official in the land, the leader of the Liberal Party, continues to do things that make him a laughingstock of the world. Then when you couple this with his outlandish actions, you know, we're talking about dressing up when he goes to India, wearing blackface too many times than he can count, being in celebrity boxing, you know, he really does it to himself. And then you couple him in his petty political pandering, his tyrannical actions when it comes to the convoy, and it really creates this noxious brew, like unlike anything we've ever seen in Canadian politics, but then across the world. And this noxiousness has led world leaders to call him out, whether it's in the UN, where many world leaders called him out for his tyrannical actions during the Freedom Convoy, and then virtually all of them left for when he was talking about democracy, the irony of all that, or even just recently, a Virginian Republican called him out for being a tyrant and not understanding the basic rights of citizens to a right to defense, as we've seen in the clip. And what I really want to highlight to you is when Trudeau talks about his utopian vision and his care and love for democracy and equality and equity and justice and all these terms, you have to understand that he's speaking in Marxist dog whistles. He's redefining these terms in such a way to smuggle in an entire world and life view. And I was struck, Andrew, I was reading through our program by, and I think I've mentioned it before on the program, by Abraham Kuyper, who was a Dutch polymath. He ended up becoming the prime minister of the Netherlands in their anti-revolutionary party, which was specifically talking about all the philosophy that was built up during the French Revolution and how they stood against it. But he's in the section where he's talking about the necessary plan to decentralize Netherlandic government. He's talking about a tendency that came from the French Revolution that preferred democracy as the rule by a technocratic elite. And this is what he talks about, talking about the preferred democracy of rulers like Justin Trudeau, who is in the ideological and intellectual tradition of the French revolutionaries. And he says this: the individual citizens are proffered a will and supreme sovereign power is put in their disposal. However, and this is the fatal weakness of the whole system, the whole administrative, centralized, liberal, progressive French revolutionary system. These same individuals, continuing the quote, can make use of this will only once every 4 years, and no other consequence follows upon the exercise of that will than that all the power proffered them suddenly passes to someone else, and the voters themselves are reduced to the level of willless beings, bound hand and foot, awarded the slavish name of administrative units. A citizen is lord of the land, it is said, and therefore he may vote. But no sooner does his ballot drop into the ballot box than he is no longer lord, and the one elected has become the master of his fate. When we're talking about the progressive Marxist social justice view of democracy, this is what is in view. You are proffered this will that is so very limited that every once in a while, depending on how your state functions, you get to cast a vote for your next dictator, who then proffers you rights as they see fit.
And that's what's so dangerous about those clips and the way he speaks. And what's so insidious is that if we're just looking at his tone and his presentation, it seems rather calm and diplomatic and disarming, and it seems that the way that he's saying it is with a gentleness that, of course, he's out for the good of Canadians, but if you actually look underneath into the content of what he's saying, first of all, it's outlandish and also factually incorrect. But you're right, it leads towards, it's building into a particular worldview, a particular system. You know, thinking about those clips, you know, people who see those clips, they might just get mesmerized by the tone and his hair or whatever, and they just kind of get, they're romanticized by that. But if you actually look at what he was saying, like in that first clip, for example, about having a totally gender-balanced society, we should do some simple math here. Let's go with the current list of 78 different genders. And if you take the population of Canada, about 38 million people, and divide it by 78... that would mean that in order to have a truly gender-balanced society, you would need to have about 480,000 people in each of these 78 different gender groups. And if that's not what he means, then I don't know what he means. Does he mean just in leadership? Does he mean just in positions of power in terms of being CEOs and the presidents of businesses? Like, it is nonsense to say we need a gender-balanced society. That doesn't mean anything. And that second clip about the rights for Canadians with regards to self-defense. The problem is there's almost a half-truth to it in that, yes, if someone comes into your house with a bat or with a knife and you come out with a gun and you mow them down, you're not allowed to do that in the sense that according to our law, yeah, you're going to get a lot of trouble. It needs to be equal force meeting what's coming against you. So if someone comes into your house with a gun and start shooting at you and you return in kind, well, that's a different story. Then there might be a chance that you will not be punished for that kind of defense. So he's partially true. But the problem is he's incorrect when he says that Canadians don't have a right to defend themselves. Yes, of course they do. Of course we have that right. And we would say the fact that a Canadian cannot defend themselves with a firearm if someone comes in with a knife is a stupid law. It's a stupid law because, first of all, the number of people who die by stabbings every year is huge. And second of all, I've seen plenty of clips of officers approached by people with knives who stab them multiple times, and the officers have Kevlar, and they don't actually fire upon the person. So it's a stupid law, first of all. And second of all, again, he's wrong. And so here are clips highlighting that he doesn't understand what he's saying. He doesn't understand reality.
Well, Andrew, I want to jump in there because what we need to understand is he reveals his view of rights really, really clearly when he is talking about the right of self-defense. He's saying you don't have that right. So like you said, it's a half true. Yes, you do. It is a matter of force, and that's kind of dictated by the government. And it's a foolish law, as you've made mention. That right, if we understand rights correctly, does exist for Canadian citizens because it's a God-given right to self-defense. He lays out in his word that because we have the right to private property, if somebody's going to steal or damage you or damage your property or come against you, you have the right to defend those things.
And he believes that but the difference is he doesn't have to pull the trigger. He has his personal guards defending him. Example, if he feels threatened by a bunch of homeschool moms and peaceful protesters making French toast and dancing in the streets, then he believes in a right to self-defense. But what he does is he puts snipers on the roofs, and then he brings police officers in from the entire country and lines up Parliament Hill to push off these protesters and then trample them with horses. And so he doesn't even believe what he's saying. He's just saying that it's for us, but not for you. Yes. You don't, but we do.
It's to protect the specials, but not for a law-abiding citizen to protect his family or his property or anything like that. But the point that I'm trying to make is he reveals that he believes that rights are conferred on citizens by their government. And that is antithetical with the Anglosphere's view of human rights that comes out of the medieval canonists who were taking rights from Scripture, and they were saying Scripture presupposes that human beings have these basic rights, the right to life, liberty, and property, which has been translated, thinking of Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness, something like that. Those are three of the most basic human rights that all other rights are predicated upon. And those rights predate government. They're pre-civic. So for a government to be legitimate, they have to recognize that these rights predate their institution. And that is what we are getting away from. That is totally opposed to a Marxist view that hates human rights, that is very skeptical of human rights, and just wants to say that any rights are just a matter of social convention. They're just a matter of, us being given these specific privileges is essentially what they become by the ruling elite, that you don't have these inherent in you as individuals made in the image of God. You only have them if the government wants to recognize them. And the interesting part, Andrew, is even in our program, to go back to Kuiper's work, he recognized the difference between a constitution and a charter historically. Are the charter... The language of a charter presupposes that the government has the ability to grant something. And that's why he said it's totally inappropriate for governments to use charters as constitutions, because constitutions recognize that there's a pre-civic realm. So I thought that was fascinating, given the fact that what we're seeing in our Canadian context is the utter total destruction of our charter and its total ineptitude at protecting the rights of Canadian citizens. And I think that gets us into the last video that we saw, this new book that's being put out, and a satirical ripoff of basically The Grinch Stole Christmas, portraying Justin Trudeau as the Grinch who stole Canadian freedoms, and how that is appropriate, because when it's fit for the government in their own eyes to roll over all of Canadians' freedoms throughout a 2-year period, they're just willing to do it willy-nilly, and they don't see that as an issue at all. They're willing to blatantly go against charter rights and freedoms, which they admit, but they just have no regard for those freedoms. And as Canadian citizens, that's partly why our program exists, is we need to push back against government and say, you need to stay in your lane. You need to recognize the freedoms that are inherent in all Canadian citizens. And, you know, though some might disagree with the approach, a great apologetic approach to point out the utter folly of our government's current tyrannical approach is by mocking it, is by pointing out its absurdity. And Andrew, maybe you can speak to that, because I know there's Christians who are saying, but Timothy tells us explicitly to pray for all kinds of people, including emperors, including kings. Peter says we're to honor the emperor. How is mocking authorities like this placed over us by God, how is that honoring to the spirit of those texts as Christians? Do we have the right to use satire and humor to speak in a prophetic way against the tyranny of a would-be dictator, Andrew?
Well, I think the issue isn't so much an attack on him while he happens to be the object of it. I think what it is, like you said, is it's pointing out the absurdity of the worldview, the absurdity of the practice, the absurdity of the actual things put into place, and using satire and using mockery. I mean, the truth is that for as much as people want to talk about winsomeness and tone as being the greatest of Christian virtues, the reality is both the Old and the New Testament are full of examples of people, prophets, men who love the Lord, who love his word, and are concerned for the people of God being taught in truth and being discipled well, mocking openly in speech and in written form, not just evil rulers, not just false prophets, but also the practices themselves. There's just a few examples. You have Paul speaking of the Judaizers, so those who would say that in order to be saved, it's Christ plus works of the law. And in this case, they were calling for circumcision. And Paul says, well, they should just go all the way. They should cut the whole thing off. And in fact, in that same letter, when he speaks to the Galatians and says, who cut you off or who cut in on you? The phrase that Paul uses there in the Greek is the same phrase. He's playing off the same idea of circumcision and telling the Judaizers, go all the way. Another example is Elijah with the prophets of Baal. Here you have these false prophets wanting to call down fire from their false god. And what does Elijah say? A little bit louder. Maybe he's in the bathroom right now. Maybe he's having a tough time in the bathroom and he's distracted. You need to raise the volume a bit more so that you can get him. I mean, there are examples of this. Now, I would also say that the passages, the command to be praying for them, these are not mutually exclusive. So yes, we should pray that the Lord would break their hard hearts and bring them to repentance. Yes, we should pray that the Lord would show our nation mercy, and that hopefully by his grace we don't continue down this path of self-destruction. Yes, we do that. But the reality is there is room for the outright mockery, for the satirical comment on evil practices, and for pointing out their absurdity by showing how ridiculous they are through these means. Now, it doesn't mean that our entire life speech is satire and mockery. we need to pick our spots. But there is room for this kind of response to this kind of madness. And I think that what you mentioned about the problem of governments saying we will confer rights as opposed to recognize the rights that already exist actually leads really well into our second story, where we have an example of the elites who say, we're going to make the rules. We're going to create our own rules. We're going to define reality. We're going to take something that maybe isn't objectively true, and we're going to say that it is something that it isn't, and we are going to do that simply because we are the authority. And so, Matt, why don't you talk a little bit about this next story that we have here?
What we're seeing here in our second story is the fact that there are many within the medical profession who are calling for the government to update their definition of quote-unquote fully vaccinated, okay? That is what's coming out from CTV News, and it says, as more evidence emerges on the efficacy of third doses of COVID-19 vaccine, experts say it's high time public health authorities revise the definition of fully vaccinated to include at least one booster dose. The vaccine, it is said, wanes significantly in efficacy after, you know, about 6 months at least of the second dose. Some reports would say sooner. Therefore, you need, it's not a two-dose solution as once was first thought. It's a three- or four-dose solution. In fact, there's a video linked to the article that we will put in the description below that has a medical professional on the video saying that even the use of the terminology fully vaccinated is inappropriate. What they're calling for as medical professionals is to get rid of fully vaccinated as being two doses and move to a more appropriate adage that to describe the course of vaccines that you'll have to do, which is fully up to date. Are your vaccines fully up to date? Because essentially what is going to have to be done if you're going to be considered fully vaccinated with this COVID-19 vaccine is you'll have to be on a constant regimen of boosters because they don't have long-term durability, and because they're not a true vaccine, they don't actually offer you immunity from getting the disease either. So that's what we're looking at realistically, Andrew, when we're seeing our government officials or health officials call for our government to get with the program to change the definition. And I just want to say before passing the torch to you, this is the very thing that so many people were worried about when it came to attestation clause regarding vaccines. And in a lot of places, and I know the federal government was one of them, they forced you to keep your job so you didn't get laid off, to attest that you had the vaccine and that you were fully up to date. But in the fine print is they reserve the right to then change what the definition of fully vaccinated means. So they're making employees attest to something that at any moment they can change the definition to. And that is something that is totally absurd when we're talking about signing a contract where you can change the most meaningful definitions therein according to your arbitrary whims.
And you're right that this is something that the tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists were warning about from the get-go, which is if you relinquish this territory, like if you give up this line, then where does it end? And the truth is that we're behind in Canada, because months ago we saw already in Israel and the UK them discussing this definition as well, but the three is not enough. It needs to be four. And so whereas we only have the fourth shot for elderly people or people working in kind of high-risk environments where it's needed, in Israel and the UK, they are well underway with fourth doses for people. And they're seeing that the waning efficacy from the third dose to the fourth dose is less than 6 months. And so what's going on here is something that was promised a particular effect and result. And not only is what it was called untrue, but the promised result, it didn't actually meet the bar. And so what do we need to do? Okay, well, let's just double down and triple down. And so as I read through the lines in the article, I found myself saying, so they argue, we recognize that the vaccine efficacy wanes, i.e. it doesn't really do what it's supposed to do, and it stops working. Yeah, it stops working. So what's the solution? Well, just more of the same stuff that's not working. That's all. Just more of the same stuff that's not working. But it doesn't work after a while. I know. Well, just again. And again, we'll do it again. And people, so I'll say this now, and I know that there are people, maybe not some of our listeners, who are going to think that's crazy, you have no proof. This is what I'm going to say. It's not going to end with 3 and with 4 and with 5. And so as long as the population persists in letting this happen, in simply complying, there's no difference between 3 and 4. Like, there's no reason that the logical connection is there, that soon it'll be 3 and then 4 and then 5. And when will it ever end? It will never end. And our listeners need to understand that, and this would be my encouragement with this, and this will be a similar encouragement to the next story when we get into it, is that if you have particular convictions and if you've drawn a particular line, don't allow yourself to be pushed further back behind that line and then redraw the line and say, okay, but this time is where I'll hold the line, because it does not get easier. Right? It only gets easier to compromise and more difficult to redraw the line. And so don't be fooled by this. We see where this is going. Make a decision, draw a line, hold your convictions, and don't back down from them. It's going to be costly, but what's worse, the continual injection of something that we're seeing sufficient evidence to show that the repeated injections pushes a spike protein further and further into your body and into your bloodstream and increases. There's this kind of exponential increase of effect that it'll have, you know, if you're a young man, if you're a middle-aged male, that it's going to have on your heart especially. And so it's not going to get any better. It's going to be ineffective. And I just, by the way, I just saw this morning that there was a story that broke that our prime minister has once again tested positive for COVID-19 after 3 doses and testing positive just before the trucker convoy thing happened, so he didn't have to deal with it. Now we have a lot of other shadiness that he has to deal with, specifically the justification for the convoy with this inquiry. And so it just so happens that he tests positive again. So it doesn't work. And so don't do it.
Yeah. And we have to keep in mind, too, that so in the article, it says, as long as we, this is the expert talking, as long as we have multiple variants spreading, that opens the possibility for new variants to emerge. That is how the evolution of these variants happen. That's actually not a great, because generally viruses attenuate, they don't get stronger, but nevertheless, I don't really see any evidence, he said, based on reason for keeping fully vaccinated, quote unquote, to only 2 primary doses. But that could be extended to 3 or 4 or 5. The reality is these are gene therapies that don't give you immunization. They're not true vaccines. And you would have to continue on a full course of keeping your vaccinations up to date in order to see the efficacy of these gene therapies work over time. And that is the reason, if you look at the video that's attached to the story in the link from CTV. That is the very reason the doctor on that video suggests that we need to change the language from fully vaccinated, which would have in it, you know, a target amount of vaccination, to something more ambiguous like keeping your vaccines up to date, which could mean you're on your 45th shot and basically your entire bloodstream is just
those memes of COVID. I'm on my 50th shot and they're like bodies falling apart and
Exactly. But, you know, that does lead us into our third story, Andrew, and that is we should, in the eyes of the government, continue to jab ourselves with this experimental gene therapy because COVID is still very much an active and urgent and present threat.
And I joked earlier at the top of the show in my lead-in, but the reality is, this does feel like something right out of the book of Revelation, right? And so now let me be clear. I am not saying that what's happening right now is what was written about in the book of Revelation. The microchips are the mark of the beast, and that Bill Gates is the beast, and blood moons and helicopters, and I'm not that guy. But what I am saying is, in terms of the narrative, this idea, so when you read through portions of the book of Revelation, specifically the seven seals, the seven trumpets, the seven bowls, what do you see? You see the growing intensity with each of these ones. It pushes you further down, and there's a greater intensity, a greater judgment that takes place. And here's where we are. It is the seventh wave, and it's bad. We don't know how bad it's going to be, but it's going to be bad. Oh, and there's also monkeypox. And this, what we are being warned about here is a potential seventh wave from the great false high priestess of this scientific statism. And so this is what Dr. Tam says. I think the pandemic is not over. I mean, we haven't been in a quote-unquote pandemic for a while. It's convenient that the definition of pandemic was changed by the CDC and the WHO so that we are in a pandemic, but we're really not in a pandemic. And we haven't been for a long time, ever since the case fatality rate dropped below a certain level, which was over a year ago.
They've basically stopped, like, locally here in Manitoba. They don't track case numbers or deaths or hospitalizations. Like, they're not publicly releasing any of that information. So it is, for all intents and purposes, the pandemic is over for most Canadians. I don't know if it is for these public health officials that will never apparently shrink into the background. They're always going to hold this specter of possible new disease, new variants, new waves over our heads to ensure that they have, you know, the predicate to force facts, force mandates of masks and other things on the population.
Yeah, like the shamans or the witch doctors or the false priests who say, unless you offer the right sacrifices and do what is required of you and kind of shake out the bones and lay them before and do what we say, you might come under the wrath and judgment of your false god, which is exactly what she's saying. Got to do the right things. And so she says, I think the pandemic is not over. She goes on, quote, it is very likely that we will get some more viral activity in the future. Now, I just want to stop.
What does that mean?
Right, yeah. Yes.
Of course.
Yeah, yes, of course there were. Colds, flus. I think, you know what I think, Matt? I think that some point it's going to rain. Therefore, you must have umbrellas permanently installed on the top of your heads. And you know what else is going to happen? Someday, it's going to be dark, which means you must take headlights and fix them to your forehead. Okay, so it is very likely that we will get some more viral activity in the future, and we can't predict exactly how big the next wave is. I think we need to prepare. We need to prepare, now listen, here it is, for the fall and winter season. Now for us crazies who've been tracking what's been happening over the last 2.5 years, what do we see? We see that viral activity is seasonal. Lockdowns and mandates do a big fat donut to affect the spread. It's entirely seasonal. And so where you see the height of the winter, which, by the way, is also the time that people are locked up in their houses and the windows are closed, where you see increase of viral activity.
Andrew, we should say regional and seasonal, right? Yes. Because in the Sun Belt, people generally are the opposite of us here right. in the north, right? We go inside for winter, go outside and go to our cabins and the lakes and everything in the summer. But because of the oppression of the heat in some of these hotter climates,
right.
they tend to go inside and to air-conditioned buildings during the hot season. So
right.
regional and seasonal.
So it's both. Yeah, I was going to say, we see it in the winter. Yeah. We see it in the heart of the winter mm-hmm. when everyone's stuck inside. And then as everyone comes outside, and also as the humidity begins to increase, we see a reduction. But then once you get to the hottest part of the summer, like you said, for those regions where once again people lock themselves inside because it's too hot to go anywhere, what do we see? An increase in viral activity. So we've been able to track that. It's seasonal, it's regional, and you could just look at a map, you could plot on your graph where you have lockdowns and mask mandates that are irrelevant for the spread. But what we've seen clearly, and we've been saying this, that you're probably, if you're going to see another lockdown, if you're going to see some more mandates, they'll probably come around the fall because flu season runs from about September to March, and you have, you know, you'll have influenza A and B, you'll have rhinovirus, you'll have coronavirus. Like every year, we see these waves of viruses, of respiratory viruses that work their way through. And so what have we been saying? What is crazy man me, what have I been saying for 6 months now? I have a really weird feeling that come the fall, there's going to be some other push for mandates and lockdowns. And what should just say? We have to prepare for the fall and the winter. And so at least they're giving us enough of a heads up. But this is just so you know, everyone, we're going to bring messaging from on high. And you can't argue with us because we are the elites and we are the experts. And any experts who disagree, they're crazy, kooky right-wingers. So we can just disregard them. And we're going to say that you have to once again either shut down your restaurant or limit capacity and limit church capacity. And so they're getting ready for another wave of tyranny, and at least they're giving us a number of months by way of head start.
Yeah, and I mean, the precedent set that this sort of lockdown and mandate schedule could be put in place to perpetuity, right? Why not every flu and cold season should the government not implement mandates when the precedent has been set that if it saves one life, it's worth it? You know, that's the type of rhetoric that leads to this mentality. And a lot of people have downplayed precedent in establishing laws and in establishing how we see people react to certain situations. And they call you kooky, they call you nutty for pointing out the fact that this is setting a principle in place that is just going to lead to this type of behavior in the future. But it's like, it's amazing that people argue that way, especially when we're in Canada, when we have a common law, case law tradition where precedent is at the heart of civic life and laws and the structuring of our society. So it's weird that people can't seem to understand the necessity to stand up, to fight, to push back, to squash the precedents that are being set, that are changing the total direction and appropriate behavior of our citizens, of our culture, of our government in Canada. And this is how you get incrementally pushed back little by little, little by little, little by little, until you have no hill to die on, and until the total relationship between citizen and their government is totally and utterly changed. The total foundation of rights, is of human rights that are pre-civic, is totally eroded. And we've talked about on the program before, why not extend this logic out, if you're the government, to the greatest of all catastrophes, of all specters that are looming over the head of everyone? Climate change. Why not climate lockdowns, if this is truly the threat that Justin Trudeau and his green nuts that he's aligned with, like Stephen Guilbeault and everything, if that's truly an existential threat to humanity, isn't government humane and benevolent if they force people to lock down in their homes, right? When we let all these definitions change and let all these precedents be set, we are changing fundamentally what it means to be Canadian citizens. And we're totally fundamentally changing what it means to be free people within a society. And we're seeing more and more, Andrew, the erosion of civil liberties to really mean only that which you could enjoy in a 5x12 cell. And that is not the biblical Christian view of liberties. And it's certainly not the view of civil liberties that the Western world, Canada, America, were founded on.
So I want to address two things. I want to speak to two different groups of people here before I give it back to you, Matt, to wrap up the show and land this plane. So the first group I want to speak to is I want to speak to pastors and elders in churches who maybe over the last 2.5 years, what they did for whatever reason initially, and then whatever reason as things went on, they shut down their churches for a very long period of time. And when they gathered together, they fully complied with all of the government mandates. They made their people get masks. They limited service size. They had separation, no Lord's Supper. They did multiple services. And maybe some of them were crazy enough to require proof of vaccination, even though that was never expected of us here in Ontario. I want to speak to those pastors who did that. And now we kind of find ourselves in a period of reprieve, right? It's peacetime. Everything's back to normal. And first of all, if with everything back to normal, if you were still masking your people and distancing and limiting worship size for Sunday morning or whenever you gather, shame on you. It's time to repent. It's time to do what you know you need to do. But I'm saying for those people who everything's back to normal and they're like, wow, that was rough. That was a rough two and a half years. But look, we came out of it and now we get to enjoy church the way that we did before. I'm telling you, it's not going to stay that way. And I'm telling you that we are receiving the messaging now. We're given fair warning that we're going to tamp down again. The government saying we're going to lock it down again. We're going to do mandates again. And so this would be my strong pastoral encouragement to you as someone who serves as an elder at a church. I plead with you, do not comply with the mandates and the restrictions. Do not shut down your church. Don't do it. They've played their hand. We've seen that this is all theater. Do not let them dictate the way you run your church. And if you're a pastor and an elder at a church and you find that there's division among your board, right, or you're the only one among the pastoral staff and the elders, or if you find yourself saying, well, us as elders, we feel this way, but our congregation, I mean, they bought in, they're terrified, then I want to invite you, please reach out to me, email me at churches@libertycoalitioncanada.com. Let's set up a phone call. Let's talk about what's going on. I want to encourage you. I want to challenge you. I want to help to equip you. We can work with you to being biblical and obedient in this way. That's the first group. And this is the second group, and it's related. You're not a pastor or an elder at church. You attend the church. Maybe you're a leader, a congregant, a member. You're involved in the church. And your church did shut things down. And they did it, and it was against your conscience. And so you came in, you wore a mask. That was the only way that you could gather for worship. Or you said, no, I'm not coming to church on Sunday. I'll stay home. But you did not want to have your conscience bound, and you did not want to have to act, you know, in a way that's discordant with your convictions. And so again, here we are, everything's back to normal, and maybe you're anticipating what happens again. Are they going to do it again? And so I want to encourage you that if you're attending church, if you're worshiping somewhere, and then they're going to shut it down again. Oh, looks like the government says we got to do it. Looks like it's time for us to close our doors and go online and do Lord's Supper online with Cheez-Its crackers and grapefruit juice and whatever nonsense they've done. Then I want to encourage you also, please reach out to me and the Liberty Coalition. at churches@libertycoalitioncanada.com. And we want to encourage you. We want to help counsel you. And you know what? I'm going to say this, and this might get me in trouble and unpopular, but maybe we can find a place for you where you can serve and where you can worship with elders that have spines, who will not bow to every whim and mandate from the government. And maybe wherever you're going to church is not really a church at all. And it's time for you to go to a place that honors Christ as Lord and not Caesar as Lord. And either way, we want to help, to encourage, to direct you, to disciple you. And ideally, we want to see that churches, all of them, decide that they will honor Christ, that they will meet the way that the Word of God commands them to, and they will do so faithfully and boldly and courageously, ready to pay the cost, because this stuff's coming. This stuff is coming, and they've told us that they are going to ramp it up again in the fall, and so we need to be ready now for when that happens.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to encourage you, every Christian would understand that a Christian is in Christ an ambassador of the kingdom of God, right? The church in one sense is the embassy of Christ in localities across the world, right? And it's amazing to me that even in a secular context, we understand that embassies have their own sphere of sovereignty. That an embassy is not, the United States embassy in China is not under Chinese authority. It is a delegation of the United States government, a sovereign territory of that government. And that is the same approach that we should understand as Christians. Churches are embassies of Christ under the sovereignty and lordship of a sovereign. Therefore, we need to obey our sovereign and properly be ambassadors of our kingdom and not subject ourselves to foreign entities when it pertains to the worship and the governance of the Church of Jesus Christ. That is what I want to encourage people who are congregants to understand, so they can hold their leadership accountable to acting in accord to the Word of God. And that is what I want to put on the hearts and minds of those in leadership, to understand your role as upholding the crown rights of Jesus Christ over all of life, especially as it pertains to matters of the church, which are solely given to Christ and his representatives to govern, and them alone, and not the state. And that's something we need to understand in our heads, but also take that doctrine off the shelf and apply it in real-time situations in the here and now. So that's why we exist as the Liberty Coalition Canada, so we can really encourage listeners to understand the proper relationship between church and state and how that plays out, and the appropriate spheres of authority, and how that actually, when you apply that into real life, what that actually looks like in society. Because we need to understand the times that we live in. And as leaders in the church, we need to be proper watchmen at the gates, lest the blood of our congregants be put on us, right? We become responsible for leading them, for letting wolves come in, for leaving the sheep out in the cold. We need to understand the signs of the time and be men and women who are acting appropriately in light of what's going on. And that's why we really exist as an organization. So we would encourage you, go over to LibertyCoalitionCanada.com, leave a donation, help us continue to grow as an institution. Again, go to the Fight Laugh Feast network. You can type Fight Laugh Feast into your app store, whatever device you're on, and you can get an app straight to your phone where you can interact with our content and the plethora of the shows that they have on that network. We would really encourage you to do that, because many of those shows are pertaining to this exact same things, and you can learn and grow from other people as well. So we're thankful to be a part of that network, and we're thankful that you have tuned in. But until next time, Galatians 5:1.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.